Welcome to How Now, the podcast where we talk about how to live in the now. And here's your host, Kim Martin Raymond.
And blessings, and welcome to this edition of the How Now podcast, where we talk about how to live in the now. I am your host, Kim Martin Raymond. I am a minister, spiritual life coach, health and nutrition awareness coach, author, and founder of Redefining You LLC, where I help my clients to realign themselves mind, body, and spirit. And welcome to this edition of the show. We are halfway through season 3 of the show. And if you are new to the How Now podcast, welcome in. Make sure that you go to my website, www.hownowpodcast.com. Pick your favorite podcast platform and be sure to like, follow, share, and subscribe. You can also scroll to the bottom of the page where you'll see the banner for this week's show. And if you click on that banner, it'll take you to the How Now YouTube channel where you can like, follow, share, and subscribe there as well. And make sure that you click the notification button so you always know what's happening in the now. And again, that's www.hownowpodcast.com. So today we're going to talk about something a little different. We're going to talk about the redefinition of life. How's that for a broad topic? You know, there are so many ways in which we think about life. We all have our own definition of what life is and what it means to us. You know, for some of us, it's about purpose. For some of it's about you know, having inner peace, inner joy. There are so many ways and so many facets in which we experience this life that we live in. And, it all becomes personal. It all becomes, the way in which we choose to conduct our lives. And there's been so many aspects of life that we've seen. There's been times where we've been, you know, tasked with being perfect in everything that we've done. We've felt the pressures of having to be, ideal in everything that we do. And then in some aspects, you know, we've just been very, very lax in how we address life and how we think about things. And it's generational. We see it in the way people, the way baby boomers perceive life as opposed to the way millennials or Gen Z experience life. It's been a different aspect for, you know, different people from different walks of life. Sometimes it's even cultural. And so when we talk about redefining life and what life means to us and how we are to go about navigating through it, you know, it's something that's a serious and a broad topic. And, my guest who is here comes to us all the way across the waters. So he's coming to me from far. And he'll tell you a little bit about that. But to help me to talk a little bit about this topic and to talk about life in general is my dear guest here. And as is customary with the How Now podcast, I'm going to have him to introduce himself at this time.
Thank you so much. My name is Harold Walter Atzmann. I am tuning in from Austria today by invitation of Kim. Thank you very much for that. Awesome. And I am glad that you are a minister and a wanderer between the worlds of the here and now, as well as where we believe we come from and where we'll go after this brief period in life. I've had, within 40 years, I've had 2/3 of my family leave their lives prematurely by suicide. Obviously, a lot of transgenerational weight and trauma that each of them were dealing with. None of them, I'm always happy to say, quick to say, were mad or mentally ill. Quite the contrary, they were extremely beautiful, motivated, very talented people, very generous, all wanted to change the world in their own way. And in some reason, failed to realize that there comes a point where you have to also take a break, look after yourself, not overextend yourself, because the world doesn't want to be changed. Instinctively, it wants to keep being just the same as it always has been. And if we're not careful, all of the good wishes and all of the energy that we focus on changing things can be reflected back on us. And rather than brightening somebody else's life, burn ourselves. So that by the end, 20 years ago, we didn't have a word for that. By the end, you burn out in a literal sense. And I've had that experience myself too. And it was a harrowing one, because you're basically, one would think, an alive spirit, or the other way around, a dead spirit in an alive body. No, an alive spirit in a dead body, but it's the other way around. It's a dead spirit in an alive body, and you kind of regret that your body is still alive when you yourself are basically gone, and you're just moving through life like a robot. In my case, it took me several years to recover from that. And it is an occurrence that I've never heard about before until I saw a documentary. And I listened to these basically older male managers going through these experiences and just telling what it was all about. And I thought that was extremely fascinating. It was kind of sad and depressing, but it was also fascinating that there was actually a human condition that could be like that. A couple of years later, I found myself in that position, and then I understood. And how difficult it is once you have lost all traction and all hope in life, how difficult it is to really come back and say, well, I'll give this a chance. I'll give myself a chance for just one more day, just to find out what's around the next bend, because I'm curious, because I want to make doubly sure that I did do my very best until the end and not quit a day too soon, which would be lamentable.
First of all, my condolences at your loss. You know, 2/3 of your family is quite a number and quite an experience to have. And, you know, but also, you know, for some, it's difficult because you think, when you think of someone ending their life, you do think about the fact that they're like, oh, you know, things are hopeless, or that there was, or that there was mental illness, or that there was something that was troubling them. And you know, to speak of it from, you know, a different perspective and saying that, you know, they were beautiful and they were accomplished and they, you know, wanted to see the world be a better place. And, you know, then it becomes perspective. You know, like you said, it's this, and I want to make sure I had that right. It's an alive spirit in a dead body. And that's an interesting perspective because I've never thought of it.
It's the other way around, which makes it even worse. It's a dead spirit in a body that still lives. It just refuses to give in. It keeps living.
Gotcha.
So every day you wake up and you find, oh, I'm still here. But your spirit, your heart, your emotions aren't here at all. In fact, you can't even feel yourself. It's the next best, closest step, I think, to, if that can even be possible, to a destruction of the soul. Or a temporary out of function.
Wow.
Your spiritual capabilities just sort of freeze, as if somebody threw a wrench into your gearbox.
Wow.
And the interesting thing is, of course, that You don't know what's happening with you. And others don't know what's happening with you either. It's like there are no words for it. It would be a bit simpler if you could, like when you're at the doctor, you could just point out with your finger where it hurts, and then the doctor touches those spots of your body with their finger or with a little hammer or, you know, whatever, and just find out to pinpoint what the pain is. Is it here? Is it there? How does this feel? How is that? But you cannot explain to yourself nor to other people what exactly it is that you're going through, what you're missing. At least that was the case with me. And I hear that that's the case with lots of people. And that's probably a good thing, because I also believe that life is intrinsically good. We tend to label things that we like as good and mm-hmm. things that we don't like as bad, right? Because we're God Almighty. So we're always quick to say, well, this is good and this is bad. I think that life couldn't care less. Life is the way it is. And we can participate or not, but it's not going to ask us for permission how it should be and how it can be. And so when we find ourselves in a situation where we don't find words anymore and we cannot explain, then obviously we are forced to either quit and go away, or quit and stay. Take a break, think, feel, be quiet, maybe for months, maybe for years. But the beautiful thing is that in that quietness and in that moment of retreat or years of retreat, that's where all the answers are. So it's not a bad thing, it's a good thing. It's a good thing that we don't have words, because language is a human invention anyway, because we're ever so clever and so smart, which is fine. Language helps us a whole lot. But sometimes we are trying to do everything with just one capacity that we have invented.
Right.
And there are lots and lots of aspects of life that cannot be approached with language, and therefore we shouldn't even try to.
That is profound. That is profound, Hal, because you're right. Sometimes you can't find the words. And sometimes words can be limiting. Putting a word on it sometimes puts it in a box. And there are so many outliers that can go around there and say, well, yeah, yes, this word, but there's this one little variable, or there's this one little thing that's slightly different. So it's not quite that. And then it's like you said, if you can't find the word, then does that mean that feeling or that emotion or what it is that's happening to you is non-existent? And it's not. It's just that we don't have a word for it, but it doesn't mean that it's not happening. So I am, sitting here being like, wow, I've never thought of it in that way. I've never thought of life in that way, or that feeling that you were talking about where yes, you're outside, your soul is dead, but your outside is still living. You're going through the motions of the day and functioning on the outside, and everything on the inside is just gone, but you don't see it. You don't see it and you can't express it. So I can see where someone would be like, okay, I just don't have the words or the expression to show what it is that's happening on the inside. And so I choose not to be here. That's profound.
Well, and if you had asked me questions like 3 or 4 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to be as precise as I am now. And I hope to be more precise in a couple of years, because I just didn't know. I haven't had enough time basically to study the subject. I had to go to university first and pass a couple of exams and really put in my homework to come to where I am today which I always wanted to also, is we need to talk about it. We need to talk about things. We need to talk about life. As limiting as language is, it is still a wonderful avenue for many things that we can do with it. Just as long as we know when language fails, and then we should rely more on empathy and being quiet with each other. But I think even that we can learn. And then there's a whole lot of other forms of communications that we have been given. Touch, for example, hugging, kissing, cuddling, just giving somebody the presence that, yes, we're here. Yeah. It doesn't change anything about the situation, but at least there is two of us in this situation. And this whole array of communicative tools that we have been given to go through life. I just want, before it slips my mind and we go further into this space trip, beautiful stars we're seeing already, I just wanted to go back to you saying what life is really all about, and that life is different for everyone. Absolutely. I think one of the biggest mistakes we're making is, and I'm still making it today, is that we think that other people think as we do. We always assume that our system of coordinates and up and down and left and right and right and wrong is basically the same, so that when people don't conform, we think that they're doing this on purpose and they're just being mean or reckless or whatever, when most of the time it's really just a collision of systems. I have my orientation and you have yours, and the beauty of spending time with each other and communicating is to actually align, at least for that time of discussion or being together, align our points of orientation. It doesn't mean that we have to put them into practice afterwards in our own lives, but at least for the time being, we can act as if we are totally in somebody else's world, which usually is a beautiful experience anyway. There's nothing that we have to do afterwards in terms of changing ourselves. So we don't have to be afraid. We can dive real deeply into somebody else's universe, so to speak, without thinking that we're going to lose ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we can learn, you know, whatever there's is to learn. Mm-hmm. My wife and I have six children. Well, five of them are boys. One is a girl. She was the latest who left this earth when she was 18. And that is when especially I said, okay, well, this enough is enough. I really didn't think that I would be some kind of mental health advocate when I was younger. I worked in film and television production for the past 40 years. But this time, again, only much more vividly, it felt like life had unloaded a whole truckload of Lego pieces in front of our doorstep. And as a family, we just get our shovels out and take care of those pieces and see that they don't block the driveway and don't block the door and basically get out of our life again. Or we realize that they're not just random pieces, but they are actually designed to build something like Lego is.
Right.
And it is up to us to do something constructively with it, because life, as I said, is the way it is. It's neither good nor bad. Life is. And it is our job, that would be my definition of my life. It is my job to not change my life and not to come to terms with it. And not even force myself to fall in love with it and all of these expectations that we're putting onto ourselves again, just to then suffer from the inability to live up to them. But life happens in individual moments. We are right in it. We can experience them without judging them, and then we can decide, what will this do to my soul? How does it motivate me to react in which way? And what can I contribute in the most constructive way to the way things are? That's life.
Yeah.
And then it's a marvelous adventure, because also because of my job with nature documentaries, I was amazed to learn many years ago that intelligence, the very definition of intelligence, and not just human intelligence, but the intelligence of any living organism, is to react in a sensible and constructive way to outward impulses.
Mm.
Let's think about it for a moment. You're a little snail or a little maggot or a little worm, you know, or one of those smaller, more less complicated biological beings. What will they do if the place where they used to live in all of a sudden has not enough light anymore for them to prosper, or not enough moisture, or not enough nutrients, or too many enemies around them? How will they respond sensibly and creatively? Will they just die? Will they just suffer? Or will they do something about their situation? And when we're not talking about the individual organism either, but about long periods of time and the evolution of life, then we easily come to realize that anything that we see today is a result of evolutionary adapting to changing circumstances. And sometimes finding them so brilliant that a former reptile, for example, chooses to stay a bird, which it wasn't once. But over long periods of time, it grew feathers and everything that a bird needs, and lighter bones and all of that. Mm-hmm. And today we have all of these birds. And I don't think they want to go back to being a reptile.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
And we have no idea what they will be in 1,000 years from now. And I think they don't even know themselves. They're just continually adapting to changing circumstances.
Yeah. Just like I think we adapt and change to the things that are going on around us. We talk about even the thing as simple as people who are having all these allergies and all these things that we never had before, because things have been introduced into our society, into our food, into our environment that were not there before. You know, and so yes, we're constantly having to make, you know, adaptations and changes and adjustments. And one thing I want to go back to that you said that just again was so profound, you know, I'm loving this because so many nuggets are dropping, and I hope that people are hearing them as you're dropping them. You know, when we're talking about, not, you said you'll have all these pieces that were, you know, deposited in front of your house. And just like you said, you can either take shovels and shovel it out of the way, or you can look at it as materials and what can I use to build with this? What can, how am I to use what it is that's being placed in front of me? You know, one thing that I say even in my coaching of others, I say, you know, we're all, you know, like we're all this lovely mosaic. We're pieces of, you know, for some of us, we are shards of glass that have, you know, and broken pieces from things that we've experienced, you know, or the environments that we've been in. But then there's that love and there's that touch and there are things that bind us and create a beautiful mosaic. And no mosaic is exactly the same as another, you know, unless it's manufactured that way. But, you know, organically, you know, we have these shards of glass. And once you put them into a setting, they're all unique and different in their own way. And so, you know, it's not by design that we are exactly the same. It's not like we're all clones of one another. We're all different. and have different experiences and different things that mold us and make us. You know, I even say at times, and I was recently interviewed by someone, and someone asked me, how am I doing? And the response that I gave them was that I'm like clay. I'm like clay. I'm being molded. And, you know, and sometimes I'm being molded into something that's a container, a vessel that can hold things, you know. And sometimes it looks so beautiful. And then at times, situations or things change. And you know how when you have that little potter's wheel and, you know, you're starting to mold it and things are looking beautiful. And then all of a sudden you touch something or something goes wrong. And then all of a sudden it collapses. Then it has to be reshaped again. There are so many things that are happening or changes that are happening around us. And at times we have, you know, we're broken down and we have to be built back up again. So it's just, you know, there are so many aspects and levels, like you said, to life that, you know, it becomes, you know, a question of, okay, how do I navigate? How do I, you know, address this space that I'm in? How do I adapt to it? You know, and yes. Is it going to look like anybody else's?
Yes, and I think to funnel all of these ideas down, which I always like to do when I'm not quite sure what I'm thinking, then I ask myself questions. I'm doing the why game, just like little kids, and why is this, why is that? And every answer I give myself, I then why again, until I inevitably end up at the very essence of what I'm capable of thinking at this moment in my life. 10 years from now, I might be able to go on even further. But why helps me to always come to the epitome of my present understanding of life. Mm-hmm. And when I ask myself why, about 1 or 2 years ago, I came to the point, which is still valid for me, that certainly my life isn't here so I can eat another hamburger tomorrow. I mean, that hamburger may motivate me to go through the day, but it certainly cannot motivate me to live another day just so that I can have one.
Right.
Because food is basically just like fueling your car. So if somebody asked me, well, why do you drive a car? And I would be answering, so I can refuel it. That would be kind of a real silly question.
Right.
The question is, well, where are you driving your car? And what do you wish to accomplish by it? Or what do you wish to see when you look out the windows? In between, you refuel it, fine. And you take care of all the necessities of life. But that is not the purpose. And the purpose for me, as comes out in this sort of driving image, is to gain experience. Experience is something that becomes ours. Nobody can take it from us. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been there, done that. Sometimes we want to be arrogant and say, so don't even explain anything to me about it. Wrong. Because been there, done that, doesn't mean that another person who's been there and done that doesn't have a different angle of the same experience. So yes, listen, communicate, be quiet with each other, cry with each other, but share each other's experiences. Because I think it's fundamentally different if you imagine yourself, for example, being an eternal spirit outside of this or any other physical world. You're outside. So the local laws don't apply to you. Mm. In our limited human understanding, we say that these are eternal laws in the world there, and what works and what doesn't work is so entirely different that it will blow our fuses and we don't even can begin to understand. Mm. I guess it'd be like living on planet Sun and even more
right.
Outrageous. Mm-hmm. So imagine we are there. For long stretches of time doesn't exist, so long stretches of being. Mm-hmm. And there comes a point We don't know exactly why. Where it would be extremely important for us to know what we're talking about and not just read it in some kind of external textbook. And even if you imagine that textbook to be full of 3D animations and virtual reality and going into it, what you're actually reading, it's not the same as being born to earthly parents in a complicated enough way, and to go through all the tedious moments and experiences of this physical world. Because everything that we think, everything that we want and plan always takes such a long time here. It's like, you know, putting one Lego piece to another. It's not just, and it shall be, and it is.
Right.
It's like, and it shall be, and maybe 10 years later it is, or maybe not. Because we also realize that what we want and what we do is not just about ourselves, but it's also about being in the right place at the right time and having the support of other like-minded human creatures like we are. So there's a lot of things that go into what we say success. And in order to learn that, and to intrinsically understand that from personal experience, but even more so to develop the kind of benevolence and patience and humility, watching other people go through the same process, specifically raising children, for example, we absolutely have to experience it ourselves. I think that's what we are here for. I've always felt that apart from the first 10 or 15 years of learning what we need in order to get through this life, most of the qualities that we need to survive here, if you come to think of it, we really don't learn here. We bring them with us. Now, we can say that these are qualities or talents and other things that run in our family, and they are passed on from one generation to the next, which is true. Part of it is also who we already are when we come, because we're not a blank piece of paper, far from it. We have a character, we have a personality, the moment that we are basically conceived. And so we come and we get into intimate, immediate contact with everything that life means. And we find out who we are, what we want, what we don't want, what we like, what we don't like, what we can do, what we can't do, what we cannot do, but it's only what we cannot yet do, because we know that we will do it given the opportunities and time. It's all this whole range of inner knowledge that gets into contact with the outer world that makes life. Mm-hmm. And once we are old and tired and die with a smile, or maybe even with tears in our eyes, it doesn't really matter, because what we have collected here is ours. Mm-hmm. It's not an inheritance. The inheritance is that we become part of the human race, and therefore we inherit everything that is part of the human experience. And that's an awesome inheritance. But what we take with us after a life lived, and not just waiting for our expiration date, but a life truly lived with purpose and intention, is that we have a knowledge that nobody can ever talk us out of again. It's not from a textbook. And it's not something that we believe in, or something that we repeat, or a poem that we have memorized. It is our own life, day in, day out, for however many years, that becomes the foundation for what's next. And I believe that we are, for a good part in this life, we are preparing for the conditions of the next. Because when you think of it, by the time you are the best, so to speak, you're old and brittle, and there's no chance to put that knowledge into action in this lifetime. Mm-hmm. And because life doesn't waste anything, it is unthinkable to me that it is investing so much time and energy in us to then just retire us, let us die, and that's it. It makes no sense. So I hope that apart from Christian backgrounds and beliefs mm-hmm. and so forth, which I have, but I always try to simplify it in such a way, not preaching to anybody by all means, mm-hmm. I try to simplify it in such a way, even to myself, to show how logical the whole structure of life is. Mm-hmm. Always saying that life is so simple. It's not easy to live. The simplest things are sometimes the hardest to do, but mm-hmm. it's so simple in its structure. And I also think that for someone to call him or herself a God, they have to. They don't. It's not a question of choice. If they want to be just, and justice is always associated with being good, mm-hmm. and good is God. If God wants to be just, then life has to be structured in such a way that anyone can live it. That you don't have to go to university, you don't have to have a degree, you don't have to have good parents, you don't have to have complete good health. Life has to be such that anyone can live it if they want to. Otherwise, God is evil, I think. Then life is only for a select few. Then we have the first class and the second class and the third class, like we were talking about before we started. So if we replace, in my philosophy, if I replace God with the universe or the creative force that made us be, it all becomes very simple. Not easy to do, as I've said, but simple to understand.
Meant to be lived. Life was meant to be lived. Just like you're saying, and it's not for the select, it's for everyone. That's why we're here. Again, that is a profound thought. You know, it is not. It's not something that is, like you said, like we were talking about earlier, you know, oh, this is the first class life, this is the second class life. Yeah. You can go biblical and they say, you know, and you know, the last shall be first. And so what happens there? There are so many ways in which we can look at life, but there, you know, and talk about levels. You know, like you said, what's considered a good life? Why, you know, as opposed to a negative life? Life is meant to be lived. Experiences are meant to be had, and they're going to be addressed on different levels. We saw that with this pandemic. Everybody experienced this pandemic at the same time, but no two people's reaction was the same.
Yes.
So it doesn't mean that because our experiences were not similar, that, you know, and we bring back up the concept of empathy. We can't discount an experience that somebody had just because it was not our own. And what makes ours superior to theirs. And
well, yes, and I think the very reason I'm going to do another podcast this week with a she calls herself a dreamer and a peacemaker from Michigan.
Yes.
It's called Basic Kindness.
Yes.
And if we're too busy for that. And the theme is going to be, or the idea is, if you think of yourself as a wonderful, powerful mm-hmm. lion, right? The king of the animal world.
Right.
And if he or she has a thorn in her paw. Try to talk to that lion.
Right.
If he will even, or if she will even pay attention. I think that many times we forget, and we also feel that slot many times, that because of our own pain and our own thorns and our own paws, we are so not understanding and unkind and curt and sometimes cold to other people. It's not because we're really bad or because we mean to be mean. It's just we are mean automatically because of the meanness that it seems to be following us. And we think that maybe we can ease the pain by first looking at ourselves, and then maybe we'll be kind and more benevolent to others again. When I think we've all experienced that to some degree, and it's often been said and sung about, if you cannot ease your own pain, as long as you can still move, as long as still you can still breathe, as long as you're still around, how about easing somebody else's pain? Maybe that will work faster.
Yeah.
And then they can turn around and help you come to terms with the thorn in your paw. Maybe not. Maybe you will even die. So, you know, I'm not trying to make a children's story out of this.
Right.
I'm just sort of thinking like a businessman,
yeah.
which I have for a long time since my teenage years, watching my mother going through incredible spells of migraine headaches, which eventually led to a whole domino effect of other unpleasant experiences in her life, and her finally ending her life when I was 20. But I grew up with a mother like that. Not that it was difficult for me, because she was a wonderful mother. And most of the time, she basically hid everything that was not right in her life from us.
Mm.
So all of the things that we knew later, or that we pieced together based on our own life experience, we didn't know at the time. She was just a wonderful, laughing, helpful, giving, generous person.
Mm.
And sometimes she was gone in a dark room because she was suffering from those terrible headaches. But she was always on about helping other people. She was always on about trying to ease other people's pain. She was known for that. And the more desolate her life grew, the more she lost herself in the life of others. Now, one could say, just like it sort of insinuates in the scriptures, that that will then heal you and make you feel better, and you will have a better existence because other people are grateful for what you are doing for them. But that's not the case. Other people are grateful for what you're doing for them, but your pain or your sickness or your illness still doesn't go away.
Right.
It's like Job, right?
Right.
Being in all of these harrowing conditions,
right,
and asking God, why is this happening to me? And even his friends were saying, well, surely he must have sinned and have done atrocious things, otherwise God couldn't punish him in this way. And the answer of God was basically, what are you talking about? Life is, and you are going through stretches that are just happening. I'm not doing this. It is happening. And all I can do, even though I'm God, is to strengthen you and to console you and to tell you that sooner or later, there will be an end of this tunnel. In any case, what I'm trying to say is sometimes we're so caught up in our own pain,
right,
that then we are forgetting to be kind to others.
Right.
And this, I think, is a pandemic that the whole planet is suffering from at the moment. We have everything we need. Most of us have enough food and a roof over our head and all the things that our grandparents fought for us to have. But we have lost what they have had. And that is time with each other, firesides, cooking, working together, the kids being with their families, and not just off to school all day, and all these social aspects that we used to have as a given,
right,
and that now are a luxury. And we're just learning the bad effects of that kind of path that we're on. Mm-hmm. Next thing would be that people are always asking, well, then who can we blame? You know, whose fault is it? And another simple answer to that, I think, is that there's no one to blame.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have all these cars and we have all these airplanes and we have all of these things that are burning fuel and that they are heating up the atmosphere. It was thought that this would eventually happen, but it was not never known on what scale.
Right.
And God or his angels didn't come down and said, are you out of your minds? If you keep doing this, then the North Pole is going to melt and the ice bears are going to drown and all of that. Maybe we wouldn't have believed them anyway, but nobody came and told us what not to do. That's also a part of life. No one comes and tells us up front what the consequences of our actions will be. We're always smart, but only in hindsight.
Right.
Voltaire, the French philosopher, said that everyone is smart, but only in hindsight. And this is the way we're learning. We're learning from making mistakes and then analyzing them and then going forward. So it makes absolutely no sense to always ask collectively or personally, who's at fault? Nobody's at fault. We all did what we thought at the moment was the best choice.
Mm-hmm.
Even if an hour later, it turned out to be, in our own perception, to be the most stupid choice we could have made. Mm-hmm. But at that moment in time, we thought that that was the best option.
Mm-hmm.
So we learn from making mistakes. And that also then, I think, goes to defining life in a way that, yes, life is going to be painful because mistakes always lead to some kind of pain.
Mm-hmm.
Even pain is only a language of the body because it has no other words or a way of communicating. If something is not quite right, the language of the body is to signal pain for us to go in search of why and where it comes from. So if life is painful, if it becomes too painful, like it is for many people these days, that is actually a blessing because it forces us to go in search of the cause and not blaming the symptom. It's not the political system's fault. It's not Trump's fault. It's not Biden's fault. It's not Putin's fault. It's not Hitler's fault. All of these things happened, and it's regrettable in many cases what happened. But the idea is not who can we blame. The idea is what can we learn from that? And how can we make sure that we only need one repeat going through many, many endless repeats? And the interesting thing is, God never interferes. So if anyone wants to contemplate about God and the love of God, then I would suggest to them to consider how much love and how much patience it needs for somebody who is almighty to watch everything and not interfere. I couldn't do that.
That's why he was so mean.
I'd like to, before we come too close to the end, I'd like to quote something, if I may, from one of the favorite movies of mine. It's not a piece of art, but it is so humorous and funny and insightful in certain passages. And it's called Hector and the Search for Happiness.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen it already. If you haven't, please rent and check it out. It's on Amazon and the book is available everywhere. It's called Hector and the Search for Happiness. And Hector is a frustrated psychologist in London, and he leaves his girlfriend for a while to get his bearings and to find out what he really wants. Pretty much towards the end of the movie, an American professor who has invented some form of contraption to measure brain activity. He says in a university class, before he then goes into doing an experiment with Hector, he says, everything in this world is going up, yet happiness is going down. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. How many of us, I wonder, and you made me remember that before when you were talking about childhood, how many of us, I wonder, can recall a childhood moment when we experienced happiness as a state of being? That single moment of untarnished joy, that moment when everything in our world, inside and out, was all right. Everything was all right. I can, there are so many moments in my life where that was just the case. But now we've become a colony of adults and everything is all wrong all the time. It's as if we're on a quest to get it back. And yet the more we focus on our own personal happiness, the more it eludes us. In fact, it's only when we're otherwise engaged, you know, focused, absorbed, inspired, communicating, discovering, learning, dancing, for heaven's sake, that we experience happiness as a byproduct, a side effect. Oh no, we should concern ourselves not so much with the pursuit of happiness, but with the happiness of pursuit. But how do we measure happiness? Emotions are like colors, you know? Difficult to explain once, but not now, not anymore, because of his contraption. All those who read auras step aside. This is science, a new frontier in its infancy, but not for long. Functional electrical impedance tomography by evoked response, or as I call it, peeping Tom. My portal into the mysterious minutiae of human emotions. Emotions that for the very first time, we can separate, specify, and quantify in actual units. And then he has Hector do this experiment. And Hector, being the indecisive character that he is, at first reacts like an 8-year-old, not going very deep into his emotions. Until his girlfriend calls and they have a real good conversation with tears and crying and anger, and they laughed until they cried and until they laughed again, that kind of thing. And this machine of Dr. Corman is going absolutely wild because it's not just showing one emotion like bright yellow for happiness or ice blue for fear or green, battery acid green for, what did I say? Happiness, fear. Sorry, sunny yellow, happy. Ice blue, sad. Battery acid green, fear. He said it corrodes you, you know. And so in Hector's brain, all of these colors blend. It looks like some kind of heavenly experience. And then Dr. Corman says, and that's it, isn't it? It's not one. It's all of them at the same time. That's happiness. It's being happy and sad and fearful all at the same time. That's what makes us feel alive. Because fear is not just something that paralyzes us, it also motivates us to win. Fearing that if we lose, we'll be eaten. We will die. So fear can be a great, stress can be a great thing. It motivates us to the highest levels of achievement for a short period of time. Stress is only not healthy when it persists for long periods of time and the stress levels never come down. But momentary stress is wonderful. It makes us feel so alive. Sadness. Sadness can be beautiful as well. Some of the most beautiful poetry, music, performances, dance, film, they're all more sad than they're happy, if we think about it. Right. Sadness is something that's very close to our soul. And obviously happy. But the happy by itself, that's like Disneyland. That's never been. Even as a child, that never motivated me at all. To be on the Ferris wheel all the time, it makes you sick.
Yeah.
But all of them together, I'm happy and I'm sad and then I'm fearful and then I'm sad and then I'm happy again. That makes me feel so alive. It's amazing.
Goodness. Like you said, it touches on everything. It touches on all emotions. Mm-hmm. It makes you feel that sense of being alone. Yeah, wow. Wow. Yeah, like you said, I like that you said it's not the pursuit of happiness, but it's the happiness of pursuit.
Mm. Well, it's a modern way of saying what the Buddhist vision says, that the path is the goal. In our Western world, we are so focused on the goal that we don't enjoy the path. Mm-hmm. And if you turn it the other way around, then you realize that forget about the goal. Once you're there, things are boring again because you have achieved it. Mm-hmm. But it's the journey. That's the journey that is so amazing. That's so interesting. Mm-hmm. That's why we watch films. I mean, coming from the film, the storyteller business, if I give you a book that's full with 298 pages that are just white, and then I give you the conclusion, the ending, and they lived happily ever after, you would be extremely disappointed. You would think,
right.
Mad.
Right.
Yet we're doing this to ourselves all the time. And even if the book is full before the end, we skip over, we virtually skip over these pages and want to read the end.
Mm-hmm.
That's not, I mean, at least to me, like I said before, I don't wish to preach to anyone, even though sometimes I know I come across that way. I think that living life in such a way is so silly.
But just like you said, when you get there, then what? You're like, okay, so now what's next?
Yeah.
And I think that's why some people are so obsessed with some of the social media and other things that are going on, because, you know, you find out in that one little moment, but then at that moment it's going, you're craving another one, and you're looking for another one, and you're looking for another one, and then you get there and you're never quite satisfied. The next thing you know, 2 or 3 hours later, and you scroll through hundreds and thousands of little episodes that have happened and have, you know, found out what happened at the end. Okay, that's what happened at the end. And then it's like, okay, what's next? And for some, it becomes a saboteur, because now you're like, uh-oh, I've, you know, this is the goal that I'm trying to reach, you know, that I'm trying to accomplish. Then all of a sudden, things start popping up in your way to thwart your efforts in getting there, you know? But like you said, so much of living life is actually, like I said, going through the journey, you know? It is a marathon. It is not a sprint. There are so many things that we miss when we don't go through and enjoy the process of getting there.
You can compare that with good food, for example. It doesn't matter what kind of food you're eating, and even if it has gold dust sprinkled into it, as some people want, because they've already had everything else that food can offer, so they go for things like that. Mm-hmm. In some really expensive restaurant, fine. But even if you eat the most special food in a hurry and just to get full, you might as well eat a hamburger or anything else that's a lot cheaper, because your goal is to just get full and not to have the sensation of hunger anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take it slow and enjoy your soul food, as is said,
mm-hmm.
I mean, all we have to do is look around. We basically already have all the answers, because we're even talking about soul food. I mean, what the heck do we mean by that? Well, It's the kind of food that doesn't just make you full, but it also makes you happy and deeply satisfied. And it doesn't have to cost a lot. It can be the peas and the lettuce and the self-grown tomatoes that you just harvested from your own. Mm-hmm. And I want to say balcony, because even a balcony is enough to do that. Right. I wish people could raise tomatoes on their balconies again, not because they need the tomatoes, but because they need to get back into the process of life, mm-hmm. of being responsible for something that's growing, but in its own pace and in its own reality. Mm-hmm. That's why I started gardening again lots of years ago, not because I thought I would be a super gardener, because I realized that basically the world does my bidding and I do my bidding, but when I build a garden, it will not do my bidding. I will have to do its bidding, and I want to learn that again.
Right.
So if people would just eat that kind of food and really enjoy it, they will be full at the end as well. But they will realize all the different nuances and tastes that a tomato, for example, can have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that they, like our kids today, are sometimes said to think that tomatoes grow in supermarkets. And all you have to do is pick them up there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So somehow I am against blaming life for what we are making out of it, or rather for what we are not making out of it, because we are stopping short at some kind of traumatic experience, like a thorn in our paw.
Right.
And then we become so focused on that pain, and we so disconnect from everybody else, that it's no wonder that we don't just feel pain, but we're also slowly dying, because once we disconnect from the rest of the human race,
mm-hmm.
as if disconnecting from the rest of the mothership, so to speak, then we get lost in the black, dark, mm-hmm. cold universe. We need that connection. We need individuality, but we need connection as well. It's like night and day.
Absolutely.
We need a day where we can do our things, and we need the night where we connect,
okay.
to recharge our batteries. This whole idea,
yeah.
especially the Western world, and especially the capitalistic American idea of complete individuality, is a speedway to unhappiness.
Okay. This has been awesome.
And nobody is stopping us from it, as I said before, mm-hmm. because we are supposed to find out ourselves. Now, if you tell people, if I tell people, they may say, oh, this is interesting, but they won't believe it until they have tried it out for themselves. And once they did, or if they have already, and then we mention that, we don't have to convince them, because they already know.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of their own knowledge. They own it. Maybe one thing that was always good for me, I think it saved my life in many ways, is that as a teenager, I came to the realization, and mostly from watching the life of my mother, whom I dearly loved, and who I wanted to understand as much as I could, I realized that life is going to be hurtful no matter what. Trying to avoid the pain is utterly nonsense, because it's going to, every time you run away, it's waiting for you around the next corner already with wide open arms. You cannot avoid the pain of life. It will find you. And it's always there first, where you think that you can hide, embracing you and hugging you. And basically saying, I don't want to hurt you. I just want to tell you a story. Will you please listen? The sooner you listen, the less painful I am, and the shorter our conversation is going to be. I just have a message to deliver, and I insist that you receive it. If you don't, I'll come back. I'll come back as often as I have to. Life's lessons come back to us until we have solved them. And that's not a question of being cursed, but it's actually a question of love, because these are the things that we will need sooner or later. And therefore, they follow us as if we own them. And we own them. We just don't know it yet. But they are part of our inheritance. The inheritance is to have the opportunity to learn them. And then once we have learned it, that's not the inheritance anymore, but then it's really our property. So I realized, if I cannot do that, if life is going to be painful no matter what, I may as well sell my hide, so to speak, as expensive as possible. With the same amount of investment of pain, day in and day out, I want to make the most of what life has to offer. If it wants to talk to me, I will listen. If it wants to be painful, I will stop short in my tracks and listen and endure it. If it wants to argue with me, or if I want to argue with it, fine, so be it. Then I will argue with it. I will yell and scream and rave and rant, and sing and dance and be happy, sometimes all at the same time. Not because I'm mad, but because life makes me do that. It makes other people do other things, but with me, it has that kind of effect. And so I'm not going to scrutinize myself either and think, what will other people think of me, and all of that. I have this intimate, let's say, love relationship with life. And I want to make the best of it. Yeah. Maybe someday we'll be best friends and be married and symbolically have many, many little children.
Well, Hal, I know, like I said, we can talk on and on and on about this topic, and we'll have many instances to do that. But what I do want to do is take a moment to talk about what you have upcoming, things that you have going on, an event that you have going on. I want to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about that before we wrap things up. So tell us about what you have coming down the pike.
Yes. Well, all of what I've said now in a nutshell can be contained in what we call a chance for happiness. 2 years after Lisa's death, our daughter's name was Lisa. We think it's an acronym that somebody pointed out to us after her going home, standing for love is all. And you can also read it the other way around, all is love. And that's certainly how we felt about her. After 2 years of trying to figure out what the future was going to be, how we truly wanted to react to this new experience in our life, because obviously it's different losing your mother when you're 20 or losing your only daughter when she's 18 and still has a wonderful life full of opportunity ahead of her, but doesn't want to go through with it. And nothing that you can say can change her mind. Mm-hmm. It's all the same chessboard, but different figures. So we decided we wanted to do something creative to get everything in terms of knowledge and energy and motivation together that we had, but also allow the rest of the world to join in with what they have. And not necessarily with what they have right now, but what they will have what all of us will have in the future as we work together and as we start talking. So we built a foundation called A Chance for Happiness Foundation in Austria. It is now 7 years old. We've been doing annual gala events in the south of Austria where we live, in Vienna, in Paris, in Monaco. And this year in October, we'll do a whole week, not just a gala evening, in London. Because first of all, we realized that suicide, and everything that is connected with it, is not our theme alone. It's not ours to keep. Certainly, it's nothing to be silent about anymore. That would be unthinkable for me after realizing that this thing keeps coming back and back into my life. So I better devote myself to it. We need to start talking about it because, as a German saying goes, in talking, people come together. Mm-hmm. There is a wisdom of the many. And as we take depression and suicide and all of the other symptoms of unhappiness out of its obscurity and stigma, like we have with breast cancer 20, 30 years ago, that started, or AIDS, HIV, 15, 20 years ago, that started. All of these formerly unspeakable topics are now the center of society conversation, as they should be, because they're just as part of life as anything else. And life is better for that, because we're seeing it in a more comprehensive way and not just what we pick and choose life to be. And we said, if we could do that with cancer and if we could do that with AIDS, HIV, we certainly can do it with depression and suicide as well.
Absolutely.
We want to bring this back into the center of society where it belongs. That's why we did those gala events, trying to connect people of influence, financial and otherwise, with networks, and prove to them that you can actually have a wonderful, brilliant evening together based on a subject like that. Because we can be grateful for those we knew who have gone ahead, where all of us are going to follow. And we can be grateful for those who are still around, that they haven't gone just yet, so that we have people to be with and exchange with and keep us warm when we need more than just ourselves. So what initially was just a hope or an idea turned out beautifully well. International artists started joining us from virtually around the globe, donating pieces of art that we could sell in order to fund the organization. After Paris especially, figures, we didn't need to approach people so much anymore in terms of, can we present your art? But they would actually ask us if we would do this, please. And yes, it's just been a very demanding, sometimes happy, sometimes fearful, sometimes sad story. But nonetheless, we are much further advanced than we were 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. And next year, we want to do a similar event in the States.
Yeah.
At the same time, we will also have a big announcement of an international body, so to speak, that from then on will convene once a year on the subject of worldwide public mental health and how we can take it out of its present desolate state and bring it to the forefront of everyday life, of our thinking, and also of what we are willing to spend money on. Because I'm always happy to say that this is not a question of benevolence. Any politician, any government health system like we have in Austria and in many parts of Europe knows what a tremendous cost it is to leave people alone with their emotional problems. Mm-hmm. Every time somebody ends their life, it's at least 25 to 30 people that are immediately affected, and that sometimes for many years are decreased in their personal productivity, which hurts us all. Mm-hmm. So this is money that is being spent already anyway in terms of loss. How about if we take all that good wine of human life, so, and productivity, so to speak, and start filling it into new barrels that don't lose even a drop of that substance? Because right now we are still pouring the good wine of generations of human beings into old barrels that have long served their purpose. So as a society, as a human race, I think we are far from getting weaker or getting less resilient or anything less that we can think of. I think we just have to look at the tools that we are using in order to keep living. And some of these tools are outdated, so let's replace them.
All right, so Walter, tell me where we can get in contact with you. Give me your email address that people who are interested in your foundation can find out more information.
Our internet webpage at the moment is still on Facebook. Okay. Some people get irritated by that because they think Facebook is something lesser of a website, when for many technical reasons, it's actually the other way around. Mm-hmm. The website just sits there and nobody knows about it, except they sign up for a newsletter. Right. But a website that's connected with Facebook gives 5,000 people, in my case, that I'm connected with, a ping every time I post something. So that's why we're still on Facebook. And if you just enter achanceforhappiness.international, it will take you right to that page. Okay. Where you can see now, as of a couple of days ago, and in chronological order, what we have done in the past 7 years. It's really quite impressive. Lots of our friends are seeing each other there again, and it's basically a wonderful entire work of art of human beings and what they have done.
Okay, you said that it's a chanceforhappiness.org?
No, a chanceforhappiness.international.
International. I'm so sorry. I want to make sure I get it right. And we will definitely have that in the description for the show when it airs.
So, and email address. Mm-hmm. Which is open to receive ideas and criticism and impulses and suggestions and invitations 24/7. That's office@topcontext.com. Top as in pinnacle or summit, and context as in things that go together. Because that is my consulting business of many years, where I ask people, what is your top context?
Yeah.
What is the headline of your life? What are you actually striving for? Because once you know that, then you know everything else. And you can deal with everything else because it's part of your top context.
Yeah. All right. So we have two ways in which to get in contact with you, via Facebook and also via email, if you have any ideas, thoughts, or comments that you like to share with Harold. Okay, now Harold, one question I always ask my guests before I depart is, how are you living in this now? How are you navigating in the space that you're in? Just so that others have ideas of things that they can possibly do to live in this now.
Something everyone can do?
Or something that you do.
Pardon?
I said, or something that you do.
Yeah, I think I do something that everyone can do. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if that will answer your question, but it will. It's my answer anyway. Mm-hmm. I feel incredibly blessed by social media. That may surprise some people because everybody's talking about not spending so much time with it and all that. And it all depends on how you approach it. It used to be that we were all confined to the right people, meeting in the right place at the right time, and basically traveling together or being in the right neighborhood so that they could possibly meet and have a conversation and find out if they have things in common that they can do. Today, all you have to do is get on Facebook or LinkedIn or Instagram. I really enjoy LinkedIn because it's much more professional in terms of its audience. And just see what other people are doing. Send them a connect request. Most of them will grant it. And once you have only 100 people, your timeline will become like a press ticker, like I used to have as a young journalist, of the emotional temperature, so to speak, of this planet's thinking at this moment in time. 100 people may not be representative in terms of a survey, but it's representative enough for you and I to know what's going on in people today. If you choose these people wisely and from different walks of life, you'll be amazed how willingly they share what they know and feel with the rest of the world and with you. And after a while, you get more courageous and then you start sharing what's important to you. And you'll be amazed about how many people are actually taking you seriously, even though you may just be a humble housewife somewhere in the swamps of New Orleans. It doesn't care. You know, internet, the world doesn't care. The only thing that matters is what do we really feel and how are we sharing it with the world? And sooner or later, this whole thing takes a life of its own. And you are waking up in the morning, sometimes happy, sometimes depressed, but you can always look at your screen and see what's happening. And most of the time, amazing things are happening. Because life is full of synchronicity, meaning that things that are alike are finding each other. That's how you and I found each other.
That's right.
And that's why we're on this podcast today. That's You'll right. be on one of mine in the next couple of weeks. And our whole network of A Chance for Happiness grew out of the basic decision, yes, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
And talk about it on Facebook. And that's how people came and joined us.
Yeah.
One thing, a word of caution, which is very natural for me. I think it should be for everybody else if they really want to make the best of social media, apart from doing podcasts like this. When you're contacting people or when you're getting to know people, don't spend too much time on social media or chatting. Use it as a red carpet, so to speak, to each other. And the next best opportunity you have to invite somebody for a cup of tea or for a video chat or for a meeting when you're in that and that city, do it. Because the social media doesn't replace physical life. It only makes it easier for like-minded people to make the first contact.
That's right. I think that's a wonderful word of advice. And like I said, it was a wonderful opportunity for us to meet and for us to, you know, have platforms like this and for us to connect. Me here in the US and you there in Austria, you know, would this have been possible, you know, years back? No. And so it's wonderful to you know, have these opportunities. And like I said, this opportunity, this platform, this conversation that we've had has been so rich and so full. And I'm so grateful and blessed that we've had this opportunity to share this space and this time. And so, you know, with that, I want to, you know, thank you for coming. Thank you for being here. Thank you for, you know, sharing your story and you know, vulnerabilities that come with you know, being able to open our minds and our hearts to others. And, you know, like I said, just grateful that you're here. Grateful that you're always, you know, that you know that you're always welcome to come back, because what's happening right now may not be what's happening 2 hours, 2 weeks, 2 months, or 2 years from now. So you're always welcome to come back and talk about what's happening in your now. And as events are unfolding, that, you know, you'll come back and share those, you know, events with us and topics with us. And, you know, hopefully that will help us to, you know, continue to live in this now and to, you know, enjoy this life in the moment that we're in. So again, thank you so much for being here with me. I appreciate you. Any final thoughts or words that you'd like to share with our audience before we go?
Thank you so much. Hugs and kisses to you, to everyone. I just hope that in whatever situation in life we are, we'll not just hang on, but we'll try to get grounded and effective as much as we can, to sell our hides, so to speak, as expensively as we can. Create as much good as we can before we go.
That's right.
No matter how we go and when we go, just as long as we had a ball of breaking the mold and doing good things that don't impress others, but that are making us feel right about it. Because we're not doing what we're doing to impress people. We're only talking about it actually to encourage them to do the same. Not the same in the same way, but the same in their way. And we'd be very grateful if anyone who hears and sees this will not just take this as a kind thing that we're saying, and that's it, but we will be in the United States next year. Every event that we do starts with us saying, this is how it will be. It's like Moses walking through the desert, all of a sudden saying, this is the place, right? This is where I'm going to have a well spring out of the ground. And because he said so, then that's how it starts. That's how we've always been. That's how Paris and London came about. And we just felt that this is the right time to say, next year we'll be in the States. If you want to join us, support us in any way you can, you don't even have to be able to attend or not even be able to speak or to sing or dance or do any other wonderful creative thing by physically being there. You can still join us by identifying with what we want, with the journey that we're on. And get in touch with us and give us support, give us ideas, ask us questions. And if you have a good place with a good network where you think would be wonderful to do and simple to do a conference like this, tell us. If we agree with you, we may just be going right there and no other place. That because things also start with being invited by people who say, when you come here, you don't have to start from zero, but right. there is a structure for you that is already waiting for you. That's what we would love to have.
All right. Like I said, you have heard it here. And again, like I said, you're always welcome back. You are now part of the How Now family. And again, thank you so much for joining us. And we look forward to continuing in this journey of life together. Okay.
Thank you.
Yes. And that will do it for this edition of the How Now podcast, where we talk about how to live in the now. And until we see you the next time, I say peace.
Bye.